Can we take the opportunity to try to learn through a sugya today? A sugya that may not exist. The name of the sugya is called Dina Yontif Bepurim. And the question is that even a true statement? Is there any aspect of Hilchos Yontif that carries over the Purim in any real sense? We know that there are many mitzvahs of Yom Purim, but are we correct in calling Purim a Yontif in any classic sense of the word? So the sugya begins, so I already have to apologize that I left my reading glasses at home, which is giving me again a little bit of maneuvering back and forth, because if I read the Megillah like this, it would be called the Korah Baal Peh, because I kid, there's no correlation to what I'm seeing, what's on the paper. So we'll try a little bit. So comes the Gemara, and the first thing in my Makom was in Megillah and the Daf Yamed Beis. And the Gemara tells us as follows, Rav Beit Rav Amar, Afil Tebi Yome, Hesped V'tainis Kabilu Alayu, Malach Lo Kabilu Alayu. The Gemara is discussing the permissibility of doing Malach on Purim. The Gemara says that Hesped and Tainis, the prohibition against eulogies, against fasting, that was definitely accepted by Klal Yisrael. That's part of being Yimei Simcha. But the prohibition of Malacha was never included. How do I know this? That there's no prohibition of Malacha on Purim? Simcha Mishnah. Look carefully in the Megillah. So first, the days of Purim are described as days of Simcha Mishnah V'yomtov. Yomtov, the Gemara is interpreted almost like the Yiddishism, like Yomtov, like this Malacha. Ulbasov Ksiv Lasso Sab Yimei Mishnah V'simcha. So notice that the phrase Yomtov is missing in the second half. So whereas when Mordechai has to try to institute Purim, so they snuck in the word Yomtov, they try to make it into a real Yomtov, presumably with a prohibition of work. At the end, when Klal Yisrael accepted the Yomtov, and ultimately all Dinim Drabban have to be confirmed and ratified by the Tzibur, so when Klal Yisrael accepts the days of Purim, so Ve'ilu Yomtov Lo Ksiv, it doesn't say the word Yomtov. They're only referred to as Yimei Mishnah V'Simcha. Here the Gemara tells us there was a little bit of a nuance historically in how the day was ultimately established. And halacha lemaaseh, we are not bound by that original thought of Yom Tov, and that is the reason why, in fact, malacha is permissible on Purim. So even though we, of course, know that Yom Tov Purim is not a Yom Tov in the sense of a realist malacha, nevertheless, Chazal do frown upon the idea of doing malacha on Purim to such an extent that the Gemara tells us that there were different customs, that there were some places where it was customary to do work on Purim, and other places where it was customary not to do work on Purim. And Chazal speak about those places, those people who are doing work on Purim. So ain't a rosim and bracha liyadam. It's just not worth it because you're not going to be successful anyway. Chazal said you're not going to get a bracha from working on Purim. So maybe we could just mute if it's possible. Everyone's muted. So since you're not going to get a bracha anyway, might as well not put in the effort to work. But in terms of being really prohibited, so only if you live in a place where that is the minute to refrain from work. There are more rights that the custom in our communities is not to work on Purim. Maybe that was true in Poland in the 1500s. I'm not sure. It's hard to say that that's the custom in Bergen County today. I think a lot of people do go to work on Purim. I think it's probably hard to judge these days because we're still not quite sure who is going to work, who's not going to work. It used to be very clear. A guy went to the office at 7 in the morning, came back at 8 o'clock at night. That means he was at work. Today, it's a little bit vaguer who is exactly doing work and not doing work. So the bottom line is that the Issur of Malach on Purim, if anything, is not a real prohibition. It's simply only a customary, and it would depend upon the custom place to place. But even though it's not prohibited, it's still something a person could try to avoid, whatever unnecessary malacha that would detract from the day once you try to do so. However, there is one aspect of yontif that definitely does carry over, albeit not the yontif of malacha, and that, of course, is the mitzvah of simcha. So we find the mitzvah of v'samachta b'chagecha, that's the mitzvah of yontif, and we find the mitzvah on Purim, v'asosa mimei mishke v'simcha. Not only is the word similar, but actually many of the halachas that govern Simchas Purim are really identical, they're almost borrowed from Simchas Yom Tov. The Rambam says this explicitly. The Rambam in the second of Maimonides, but he describes the mitzvah of making a suda on Purim. So the Rambam writes, Keitzer chova suda zu, sheyolchol basar. So the first thing the Rambam says is you have to have meat. V'yisakin suda no'a, it has to be a nice meal. Kefiya she'atim seyodo. So the Rambam is telling you that it's a question of what you have to serve. It has to be fleishiks. It has to be a nice meal. V'sho seyayin. And it has to have wine as well. So these three components are pretty much taken out of the notion of a simcha on Yom Tov as well. The Rambam has a comment in it with Yom Tov, where the Rambam talks about the mitzvah of samachta b'chagecha, which the Rambam understands to mean even binding bizman hazeh min haTorah. But the Tosfos were of the opinion that simcha on Yom Tov today is only mitzvah rabbanan. The only simcha Yom Tov derives is bizman hamikdash, But the Rambam's view is clear that there's a mitzvah binding in a Torah supers Yom Tov. And the Rambam writes that there are two things that are necessary to fulfill this mitzvah. One has to have bosor, one has to have yayin. So the idea of bosor yayin that originally appears in the Yom Tov carries over to Hilchos Purim as well. The Rambam also makes mention of the fact that it has to be a Suda Noah. So this is also something which has a similar idea on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Also, the Toras Kohanim comments on the Pasuk in Vayikra Mikra Kodesh, a Shabbos of Yom Tov Makor Mikra Kodesh. So the Toras Kohanim says, the Toras Kohanim was the Medrash of Tanoim, Medrash Halacha of Tanoim on Chumash, going on Chumash Vayikra. So it says in the Sefer Toras Kohanim that Mikra Kodesh refers to you have to have a special meal. So we already know you have to have a meal on Shabbos. We already know there's the mitzvah of Krosla Shabbos Oneg, there's the mitzvah of Suda Shabbos. So what is added by the notion of Mikra Kodesh? So apparently what the Toras Kohanim is driving at is that the Suda on Shabbos and Yom Tov has to be a Shabbos to meal, has to be a Kedusha to meal, has to be a special meal. In theory, one just has a slice of pizza and calls it a day. So did one fulfill the mitzvah of Suda Shabbos? Technically, yes. Assuming that you hold it, you wash the bench on pizza. So a person that something very, very weekday oriented kind of a food, did he fulfill the mitzvah of Oneg? He enjoyed it, yes. But did he fulfill the mitzvah of Mikra Kodesh? No. So over here, the Rambam seems to say that in theory, a guy takes a hot dog and a cup of wine, and that's the entire Suda Purim. So technically, he had the boss of the Yayim, but he didn't really fulfill Suda Noah Kafir Shetim to the other.
Yeah, Bosor and Yom Tov going to the Rambam is for women too.
So the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says that when it comes to Sukkot Yom Tov, so it's different people what they prefer. So the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim says that Anoshim Beroilem, Benoshim Beroilehem. So Beroilem Anoshim is Yayin, and the Gemara says that the women don't enjoy the wine as much as women enjoy big Tzivayin.
So how does that translate to Purim?
So that's the question. So it's Purim, it's a little bit unclear. So this Purim, we know that women are chayavos in all the mitzvahs of Purim. So women definitely are obligated in having a Suda. Does that Suda translate to being Basav Yayin? Also is a little bit unclear what that means. But the Rambam is very clear that there is such an obligation. However, when it comes to Shulchan Aruch, it's true that there is a halacha of Basav Yayin in Purim, but it's a little bit less clear than the way the Rambam presents it. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Purim, it doesn't actually say black and white that you have to have Basav Yayin. It doesn't say you have to have Basav at least. The Shulchan Aruch says it very, very roundabout. The Shulchan Aruch is talking about a shaila that someone who Rachman Litzlan becomes an onein on Purim. If an immediate relative passes away, so then obviously you're going to have a kavura, you're allowed to have a kavura on Purim, there's also halacha. So therefore, the halachas of aninus kick in. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, the regular halachas of aninus don't apply because you're not going to have a kavura anyway. On Shabbos, for sure, it's impossible to have a kavura. On Yom Tov, in theory, Yom Tov Rishon, you can have a kavura yedei goyim, and Yom Tov Sheni, in theory, you can have a yedei Yisrael. The Maisa, for a variety of reasons, Maisa, we don't do that. At the end of the day, we don't really have kavuras. Most communities don't have kavuras on Yom Tov, and therefore, Maisha writes that it's hard for us to say that there's any aninus really on Yom Tov. The beginning of the Gemara, on Shabbos, there's no aninus, and Yom Tov, it depends if you're going to have a kavura or not. Whereas Maisa, today, nobody has kavuras on Yom Tov. Most communities don't have kavuras on Yom Tov. So therefore, the Maisa is not going to be any real aninus. But on Purim, there will be aninus, because on Purim, there's going to be a kavura as a regular. Leave out Haspedim, leave out some of the details, but the actual burial is going to take place. So therefore, the person has the status of an onen. As an onen, so he's not permitted to have bosor v'yayin. So how does that square off with the obligation of Suda Purim? So on the one hand, he's an onen, on the other hand, he wants to have a Suda Purim. So Shulchan Aruch quotes that Yesh v'sha'oner, sha'onen mutter v'bosor v'yayin, that an onen is permitted to have bosor v'yayin. And on the hierarchy of mitzvahs, so the mitzvah of Simchas Purim is much, much more important than the mitzvah of Avelus, or in this case, Aninus, for two reasons. First of all, Purim is a mitzvah shel Rabim. It's a communal mitzvah. It impacts other people as well. And number two, it's not just a plain derabbanan. It's mentioned in Kisvei HaKodesh. We spoke a little bit about this last week. It's mentioned in Tanakh, in the Ksuvim. And therefore, it's on a higher rung than simply the regular Isurim of derabbanan. So for this reason, the Shulchan Aruch quotes one opinion that one can have the Suda Purim literally on in the state of aninus. So for the fact that Shulchan Aruch is bending over backwards to try to defend the practice of having Bosor v'Yayin, the aninus on Purim, clearly the Shulchan Aruch is buying into the idea that Bosor v'Yayin is important on Purim. If you would hold that you don't really need Bosor v'Yayin for the Sudas, then what are you violating Yisurim aninus for? So clearly the Shulchan Aruch is going in the footsteps of the Rambam. What's a little bit surprising about this is that the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Yom Tov actually doesn't follow the footsteps of the Rambam. In Hilchos Yom Tov, the Shulchan Aruch writes that the obligation of Simcha and Yom Tov can be fulfilled with wine, and no mention is made of Basar. In fact, in the Beis Yosef, where he explains where he got what he says in Shulchan Aruch, He points out explicitly he doesn't think the Rambam is necessarily correct. He doesn't think there's an outright obligation to have meat on, you know, it's a nice thing to do. It's a beautiful thing to do, but in terms of being an absolute requirement, Shulchan Aruch is not so sure that it even exists. That's a loaded question, halacha. This is most important for Shavuos. People get into all rah about the Shavuos time. So some people eat milchik meals in Shavuos, and others are shrine chai v'kai. You're eating milchik in Shavuos, kabal, you have to have basar, yayim, the rice, kabal, you have to have basar. So those who defend having the milchik meals on Shavuos, they would say that we don't follow this Rambam. We follow the view that you don't really need basar on Yom Tov. Those who want to follow the Rambam, the Rambam, the Shemuru, recommend to follow the Rambam, the Chachila, so we insist on having meat on Shavuos. In fact, the original minhag that the Rambam quotes for Shavuos, but having milchus and Shavuos, was not the way most people fulfill it today. The Rambam quotes that the original custom was that they would come home from shul and they would wash, they would have a little bit of milchus, and then afterwards they would clean up the table, wash their hands, wash out the mouth, and then they would bring out the fleshings. So it was at the same meal. So it's not that they had milchiks at the expense of fleshiks. They had milchik in addition to fleshiks. What was the source of this bidding? What was the reason for the bidding? So the Rambam writes that it wasn't that we were running to have milchiks. The idea is that we want to make a zeich and we want to remember the shteh lechem. And in Shavuos, there were two loaves of bread that were brought as a carbon, the carbon of the shteh lechem. So the Rambam writes that how are you going to force a person to get an extra loaf of bread on the table on Yom Tov? Oh, if you start the meal with milchiks, so then the halacha is you have to take off that bread and then serve another loaf of bread for fleishik. You can't have the same bread that was cut for milchik meal served in a fleishik meal. So the Rambam says, by definition, you're going to end up with shtei halachim. So you're going to put out the first bichala for the first part of the meal, then you're going to put down a second chala for the second half of the meal. So 1 + 1 = 2, you're going to end up with the shtei halachim. So the problem was people like the milchiks, they don't like the fleishik as much, and they cut out the fleishik part, but they just had milchiks. So the Rambam said that undermines the entire minhag. The whole point of the minhag was never to have milchiks. The point of the minhag was to use milchiks as a game, as a chatimtzi, to get to the point of having two loaves of bread. Others give other reasons for milchiks. When we're little kids in school, they don't tell us that reason. They give us other reasons about, you know, the Kleistel didn't know they didn't move shrit or whatever. They couldn't prepare the meat, whatever the details of the other reasons are. But the official reason that the Rambam gives is in order to enable you to have a zechet rishteh lechem. I remember what we usually do in our homes, as you know, is we have the two meals, but we spread them out by about a 6-hour nap in between. So usually what I do is right after davening, so I come home, the kiddush, and then I wash and have mamsha cheesecake, whatever milchik stuff that my wife left out for me from the fridge from the night before. And then sure, then I bench, I go to sleep, and then I have lunch 6 hours later. So that's my, I'm not waiting 6 hours to come fill the flesh with this because that's a long one nap. So we have to get up for lunchtime, 1 o'clock, so then I have my flesh meal. So I have my shalachim, let's spread out a little bit. So a couple of years ago, I think it was before Yot Kufa joining us for the meals, a couple of years ago, so I came after Davi, walked into my house, and I was about to look for the challahs. And I don't want to open up the whole challah, so I was going to take some rolls. I noticed all the rolls were in the freezer. It was like very low nays. Taste so good, frozen challah rolls. Not such an exciting simple yadu. So you know, no big deal. So I'll take out some matzahs. So I had a box of shmur matzahs left over. So I took out 2 shmur matzahs. I'm sitting at the meal and I'm making a motzi. And I said, what a bizarre kiyum of the shteh lechem. I said, shteh lechem is supposed to be chametz teyafena. The Torah is supposed to be chametz, and I'm having handmade shmur matzahs on Shavuos. So some people think there's a new minig. A new minig is to have shmur matzahs. There's no minig, just they forgot to take out the challah rolls. So I'm getting back to that story. So on Yom Tov, we try, many people try to have fleishiks. On Purim, everybody tries to have fleishiks, because on Purim, even the Shulchan Aruch writes that you have to have fleishiks on Purim. So it's a strange thing. According to the Shulchan Aruch, Purim is almost a little bit more chomer than Yom Tov. When we speak about having fleishiks, like Yom Tov, or even more than Yom Tov, what constitutes basar? So we know that in different areas of halacha, basar means different things. Milk is kasher, so the rabbanon chicken is the same as meat. And milk is kabanos, clearly chicken is not the same as meat. So there are some who say that since the whole idea of having basar and Yom Tov, by extension of Purim, is a throwback to the Besah HaShlam, to the Karbonos of Simcha that were brought in the base of Mikdash, so they should really be meat. They should have real animal meat, not just poultry for Yom Tov meals. And if that's the case, a little bit of real flesh. And by that extension, so some of our practice on Purim also, that maybe the main dish will be chicken, but they should have a little bit of meat, a real piece of meat, so it should be a little bit ke'ein, the real mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. So Kopanim, we have 2 different areas of halacha where certain nuances of Yom Tov slipped away into Purim. One was in the realm of Malacha, so it almost became a Yom Asim Malacha, didn't quite succeed. And then the second area is in terms of at least some of the comparisons between Simcha from Yom Tov to Purim. Then there is a
Rabban Yom Tov, because of
Malacha on it? They could have, the Gemara says they would have wanted to. they would have wanted to do it, but the Maaseh fell short.
Is there any
Yom Tov Rabbanon
that we have that?
There are only two Yom Tov that we have, that we have left. Yeah. So they were never in the school. Right. They could have, but they wanted to. So the next aspect of a Yom Tov notion of on Purim turns applies concerning the mitzvah of saying Hallel, or when it comes to Purim, the lack thereof of saying Hallel. So the Gemara introduces in the fourth of the Mamakomos about saying Hallel on different occasions. So the Gemara starts out by saying, "Umami abus lecheiros amrin and shira v'misa lechaim lechol shagain." When Klal Yisrael was saved from Paro, from Mitzrayim, as Yoshia, so they said Shir Layam. So Kavachomer, the days of Purim, was saved from Misa Lachayim. For sure, we should celebrate. The Gemara says that celebration is Kriyas Megillah. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Why don't we say Hallel on Purim? That's the question of the Gemara. So the Gemara is about to give a whole bunch of reasons why we don't say Hallel on Purim. The premise of the question is quite obvious, that the Gemara could have given a very, very simple answer and could have ended the sugya right then and there. That maybe only say Hallel on Nisim, which are Gluyim, Nisim that are revealed miracles, that are public miracles that everybody can see. When you have a Nes Nisner, a Nes that's done behind the scenes, a Nes that's a very hidden kind of a miracle, maybe that kind of a miracle doesn't warrant a Hallel. So the Gemara could have easily said that and knocked off the question from Purim in the first place. The Gemara doesn't do that. It would appear from the Gemara that the Gemara didn't think that that plays much of a difference. It doesn't matter how the Nes played out. What matters is the result of the Nes. Namely, if the salvation is great, or in this case, even greater, the Madach, the salvation, the Yeshua in the days of Mitzrayim was just Me'avus V'cheirus, so on Purim, which was Me'misa L'chaim L'kol Shigein, even though the method that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used was within the world of Teva, he didn't split the oceans, he just could have put a few right people in the right place at the right time. So those Nisim, which are done Derech L'fiyat Teva, even though they're not a manifestation, openly of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yad Hashem, but Alpha Bichay, the result is the same, or perhaps even more, that there's a tremendous Yeshua. So the Gemara thought that there's really every good reason, there's ample reason to recite Hallel on Purim, so why don't we? The Gemara says one reason is Lepisha Eino Mehalla Nesha B'chutz Loretz, because we don't say Hallel on Nisim that according to Chutz Loretz, is of course the reason why Hallel Purim and Chanukah part ways. So yes, the Gemara, it says Mitzrayim, the nation, B'chutz Loretz, Echem and Shira. If so, it says Mitzrayim did not occur in Eretz Yisrael. So why do we say Shira for that? The answer is that Kol Zman, the Jewish people have not yet entered into Eretz Israel, so then they could say Hallel and Shiras for other Nisim that occurred outside of Eretz Israel. Mishenichnas Yisrael Oretz, once Eretz Israel was conquered by Klal Yisrael, so that became the place of the Jewish people. Then you cannot recite a Shira on Nisim that occurred in foreign lands. That's the first answer. Rav Nachman or Kriyas Megillah. Rav Nachman says that the Kriyas Megillah is the Hallel. Hallel doesn't have to be just a text of Hallel Abdi Hashem. Hallel has to be praise to Kodesh Baruch Hu. So if you read the Megillah, you really get into the story. You understand that's a Gavaldu Geshevach L'Adoya to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Rav Amar Bishlam Hashem. Rav says no. That the reason why we don't say Hallel on Purim is because there's something missing. There was something deficient about the Nes of Purim. Bishlam Hashem Hallel Abdi Hashem L'Avdi Paro. So by Hallel of Mitzrayim, we can open up the words of Hallel and say, Hallel Avdei Hashem, we're now Avadim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but no longer Avadim to Baro. Elohacham, Hallel Avdei Hashem, well, Avdei HaKashveirosh. How are we going to say with a straight face, Hallel Avdei Hashem, we're still the servants of HaKashveirosh? Akati Avdei HaKashveirosh, Anan. That's what the Mefarshim point out, that why, how do you know even in the Megillah itself for Avdei HaKashveirosh? The last parak of the Megillah starts, HaKashveirosh, raise the taxes. Hallel Aretz, V'ayam. So we're not free. We have to still mishubah to the rule of Achashverosh. So there's something lacking in the names. So the bottom line is there are three answers in the Gemara. Two of them are working with the assumption that there's something lacking, something deficient, something missing in the names. One focuses on that it's a chutzlarts. The other focus is that the miracle is not complete. But the common denominator of those two answers is something missing in the names. The other answer that the Gemara says is there's nothing missing in the names. There really is a chi of Hallel. It's just that the Hallel presents itself in a slightly different text of Ebrachashverosh instead of Hallel of the Hashem. Is there enough to mean any practical difference between the reasons? So the Rishonim point out there's a big difference. Let's say a person does that Megillah. So he gets punished, stuck in the hospital, so he doesn't have anyone to lay the Megillah for him. He has a sitter. So can he say Hallel? Should he say Hallel? So some folks can say, yeah, he should say Hallel because he's chayef to say Hallel. If you have a Megillah, then you say the Megillah instead of Hallel. If you're not going to have the Megillah, then you say Hallel.
With a bracha,
yeah. According to some poskim, the man should have bracha. Another poskim say, "Nah, first of all, how do you know we pass like that answer? Maybe we pass like the other two answers. And even according to that answer, it's not clear that that conclusion would be halachically correct. Maybe Chazal weren't misaking halal on Purim because this creates a Megillah. For 99.9% of the people, they're laying the Megillah. So Chazal never instituted that. So one halal for one lone guy stuck on a desert island without a Megillah. So it's not clear. So I don't think anybody today would actually say halal with a bracha. Would everyone say without a bracha? I'm not sure. But with a bracha, I don't think anybody in the world would ever make if you're not going to have the ability to have creates a Megillah. So the bottom line is this whole idea of potentially saying halal on Purim, even the discussion, it's a very Yom Tov oriented discussion because we usually associate Yom Tov and Hallel. But the answer is it's not exactly true. That the association that we have of Yom Tov and Hallel is a little bit different. The Gemara says explicitly, both in Maseches Tainis and Maseches Erechin, that there are really fundamentally two different kinds of Hallel that are recited throughout the year. It's the same word, the same text, but the Bechai, the engine driving it, is very, very different. One kind of Hallel is a Yom Tov Tikkah Hallel, and the other kind of Hallel is a Neis Tikkah Hallel. They're so different from one another that we have days on the calendar that are Yom Tovim without a Nisim. Let's say, for example, Shmini Atzeres. What grandiose miracle happened to Shmini Atzeres? Absolutely nothing. Or Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara says, we really should have said Hallel in Rosh Hashanah, even though there's no miracle. The only reason why we don't is because Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Mesim, Psuchim, in front of. It's not right to say Hallel when the Kadosh Baruch Hu is judging us. But if not for that reason, we would have said Hallel in Rosh Hashanah, not in Yom Kippur. No miracles happen on the Yom Noraim. Still, Yom Tov itself is a Mechayim of Hallel. On the other hand, we have days where there's absolutely no Yom Tov, Chanukah. We wouldn't have even given the shiur about Chanukah. Chanukah, there's no, not even a ham meaning that it's a real Yom Tov and Chanukah. And even though the Gemara Tachin uses the phrase, v'kam Yom Tovim, here it means v'kam Yom Tovim, v'hal v'adom. Doesn't really mean Yom Tov. Doesn't mean Yom Tov like in the realm of the Yisra Malacha. Even though Yom Tov itself is a little bit of a misnomer, because although the Gemara Megillah took it in the sense of the Yisra Malacha, but the word Yom Tov in Chazal, the word Yom Tov literally just stresses a good day, means a special day. You know, we today in Yiddish, so we say it's a Yom Tov, we're somebody on Yom Tov. But really, it's a regel, it's a chag, it's a moed. Those are the halachic terms that are used. The word Yom Tov appears in Chazal, but it doesn't conjure up that imagery of the real Issam Malach in the classic sense of the word. But back to our story. So the fact that we're discussing Halal on Purim doesn't really have anything with Yom Tov. Because this is not a Yom Tov Tikkah Halal. This is a Neis Tikkah Halal. This is like Chanukah Tikkah Halal. That's why the Gemara is differentiating between Halal and Chanukah because it occurred in Eretz Yisrael. Halal and Purim, no, because it occurred in Chutz Laretz. But this is not a discussion about the Yom Tov Bichlal. This is a Halal of Neis. So far we have a few different possible dimensions of Yom Tov, and we seem to be striking out on each one of them. Now, we didn't do too well in terms of the Issa Malacha. That probably doesn't really carry over. We discussed a little bit about the Suda, maybe a little bit, and then the Halal probably fell short as well. So there is one other aspect of the Yom Tov that also appears, at least according to some Rishonim, in Hilchos Purim. That's in the fifth of the Maamar Kamos. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that Kol Divrei Aveilus Nogim Chanukah Purim, that the regular halachas of Shiva apply on Chanukah and on Purim. And the Rama writes, B'komokam Yelachah Be'Sekhnes L'Shma Megillah. So the Rama writes that even though the halachas of Aveilus apply, and normally an Obel is not supposed to leave his house, but he's got to go hear the Megillah. So the Issa for an Ovel to leave his house, the Rama writes, it's Aveilus means you're not supposed to go walking around the street, schmoozing, going, you know, talking with people, taking a walk, for leisure, things like that. If a person has to go somewhere, so then it's not an Issa Gomer to leave the house. That's why we're a little bit more makel today. People sometimes are sitting in one place, they have to go across the street to sleep somewhere else, you know, that kind of stuff. The person's not really going anywhere, but the person's not supposed to be stopped walking around the streets when he's in Aveilus. The Mucha less of meeting the base, like, and then the Rama writes, that if you get a minion to lay it in your house, mato. V'yesh omer, and then the Rama writes, in contrast to the Shulchan Aruch, the Rama says, she'ain avelus noig b'purim, lo b'yadav lo b'tizbav, that there's no avelus on Purim, neither on the 14th nor on the 15th. D'chei noagin. And that is the custom today of the Ashkenazi communities. Afil avelus yom rishon in chelbe purim, even the first day of avelus, which according to some is even stricter than the rest of avelus, everything is pushed off because of Purim. Aval dvarim shebetzina noheg. But private parts of Avelus are knowing. So it's pretty much similar to the Ma'al of Shabbos. Shabbos also, the Avel wears his shoes, he doesn't wear his kriya, he doesn't sit on the floor. Those are the things that will attract attention. But the privacy of his own home, so certain things are observed for Avelus. That's the same model that we have for Purim. Aval bisha in a noig Avelus for Purim, even though there's no Avelus on Purim, olololol l'minyan shivim Avelus v'ov Shabbos. So it still counts towards one of the days of Shiva. So this is a very, very strange compromise because when it comes to Yom Tov, Yom Tov does not count towards Shiva. Let's say, for example, if a person buried their mace before Yom Tov started, so then Yom Tov cancels the Shiva. Let's say a person covered mace of a regal. So the Gemara tells us that if a person buries the base that Chol HaMoed, so the Shiva doesn't really start until afterwards, but they have to observe Dvarim Shabbat Sinner. We Paskin joined us a couple of days of Chol HaMoed and the last days of Yontif. But those days do not count toward Shiva. So Yontif and Shiva don't mix. Yontif and Shiva cannot possibly, you can't say today is Yontif and it also counts as one day one of Shiva. When it comes to Purim, we have that strange split. And on the one hand, there are more Paskin as Dovelus. On the other hand, it counts as a day of Shiva. So it takes on the characteristics of Shabbos, which is very strange because Shabbos has those characteristics after because it's not a time of Simcha. So the whole model of Purim is Purim close to the Shabbos, close to the Yom Tov. The whole thing is a little bit confusing to understand. But Lamais, that's what Zashtet, that's what it says in the Ramah, and that's what the practice in the Ashkenazi communities is today, is that one does not outwardly observe about. Somebody literally just asked me to shout out 2 hours ago. Somebody came to tell me that somebody was Niftar, and the Levi is going to be tomorrow, which means the last day of Shiva is going to be Wednesday, which is going to be Shushan Purim. So the Ramah writes that there's no Avelis Nidhi Yadal Nuan Tezmav. So basically that means for all practical purposes, is Avelis is going to come to an end on Monday night when Purim begins. He's still going to be observing the Dvarim Shiva Tzina all day Purim and then into Shushan Purim a little bit. And his last day of Avelis will be Wednesday morning, like any other person who ends their Shiva at that point. So this idea that Purim, at least according to the Ramah, loses out some aspects of Avelis is a little bit of a Yontif model, but it's not the perfect replica of Yontif. According to Shulchan Aruch, it's not Yontif altogether, because Avelis is full-blown Avelis, full-fledged Avelis on Purim. So again, we have four different areas of Hilchos Purim, one concerning Issa Malacha, one concerning the Suda and the Simcha, one concerning Halal, one concerning Avelis, and the parallels to Yontif are not quite perfect. There are certain nuances of Yontif, but it's not real Yontif. And the reason being, because although in the early days, the first year of the Purim, they wanted to try to make it a Yontif, Lamaisa didn't succeed. There was an interesting practice that the Mishnah quotes in the Maharil, which is also a throwback to the Sefer. The Maharil writes that one is supposed to wear Yontif clothing on Purim. It's supposed to get dressed up nice. Not supposed to come to show for the Megillah and weekday clothes, but it's going to dress up like Yontif. So the Maharil writes, why is that? Because Yontif Ksiv, because it's called the Yontif, which is a little bit hard to understand, because the Gemara actually goes out of its way to say it's not really called the Yontif. But some of that stuff, some of that meaning of wearing Yontif clothing stuff, many people are mocked on this. Many people have asked me over the years, they want to come in a costume to the Megillah. So they want to know, not a stira, a stira dramas. So in one place, the Ramah writes that you get dressed up, we post a minute to get dressed up on Purim. And the same, the postman quote the Maharil that said you're supposed to wear Yontif clothes. What's the answer to that stira? It's a joke, and I'm not sure it's a firm term. I'm not sure that it's a stira. So first of all, the reading that the Ramah quotes is not to wear costumes. They don't have costumes. And the Ramah quotes to wear masks, to wear it something over your face that has to pun him. Then the Ramah makes mention that there were people who used to get dressed up also, used to wear different kind of clothing, and they talked about wearing shalits, the rice, and abundance, and wearing women's clothes, all kind of strange shalits that come up. So there was such a practice of getting costumes. But Lechora, the minig was not for the Kriyas HaMegillah. The minig was during the day, you get dressed up. So I thought that I'm well aware of the fact that Hefer Shul does come into Shul looking like who knows what. But I thought that the more correct practice probably would be that for the Megillah, you come dressed like a mensch, like you still have to have a Melech. So you should come like a mensch, dressed up a regular Yantar post for the Megillah. Then you want to put on your costumes for the post Megillah excitement. You want to put on your costumes tomorrow for Shalach Manas. But I think davening part, I think, should probably still be a little bit more correctly in the Yantar garb. But that's not an absolute Torah, so Shach. I'm well aware that most people probably don't necessarily follow that. So anyway, bottom line is that is Purim Yantar, not exactly in the halachic sense. Is it a good day? It's a very good day. So hopefully, Mitzvah Shem, we shall be zeichet of a wonderful, enjoyable, we'll call enjoyable Yom Tov Purim, and hopefully, Mitzvah Shem, we see it in Shurim. Wow.
Thank you. I remember Rabbi Willing very specifically said,